Tonight we're going to cover 60 or 70 chapters, but we hope to do it in a very short time. This is an overview of what we've been studying on Wednesday night, Genesis and now Exodus. And it'll be a look forward to our next book. And the reason I had to pass out, number one, if you're trying to scribble notes, you've got them now, whatever's on the screen. And if there's a particular event that we refer to tonight or you'd like more information, you've got the scriptures on the two different outlines for Genesis and for Exodus. And so we're just doing a quick overview of these two books and an intro into our next book of Leviticus. The title, the English title, Genesis, actually means the origins. It's the first book of five that Moses wrote, is given a credit for. It reaches back in history several thousand years or better, almost two, in that it gives us a count of God's people. Now we would say, well, why do we need to know all this? Well, depending on what your age, if you're young, I think it's great to know the story of creation. Because many friends, schoolmates, people at work are going to talk to you about other theories. And we need to be ready to defend this. Now, when we studied that creation, Brother Sean Willis gave us some hard scientific facts. And there are times I wish we had Wednesday night recorded, but I realize that takes a lot of work. So do we do the audios on Wednesday? I don't remember, Nathan. Sometimes, yeah. But anyway, the Old Testament is basically a huge history book. Many of us like to know, well, about our parents when they were a lot older before we were around, or when they were younger and we weren't around, and then as they age, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, and perhaps one was in the Civil War, and our American history. Well, this is the history of God's people. And so the origins, or the beginning, is what Genesis is about. And in fact, that's the very first part of Genesis 1 is in the beginning. It's a series to introduce what we call the Pentateuch, which is the first five books, and actually the rest of the Bible. And it demonstrates, it's being quoted 35 times in the New Testament, referred to by the writers and the inspired writings of God. However, there are hundreds of different allusions to what was happening back then. Let me see if I can shrink that just a little bit, get it all on there. There we go. So there are two basic sections, the Genesis, we've covered this, the primitive history in the first 11 chapters. This goes back to the time of the very beginning, and it's roughly 4,000 years before the time of Christ. And for homeschoolers or just some of our speakers or whatever, and you can get this at Bible stores. I bought this on Amazon, but it's called the Bible Timeline. And it's kind of neat. It gives you the years, but it gives you the specific events. I really meant to take a few photo slides of this. It only covers up to the time of Christ. They have other timelines that cover the New Testament in greater detail. But it helps you to appreciate all the events that we have read, and we will be reading how all this kind of interweaves, as well as this particular timeline gives the books it's covered during this time. And you get back into the prophets and Psalms and different places that are in the Old Testament, and the greatest specific events like the flood, the Tower of Babel, and of course the Exodus, and the time of the judges, the time of the kings, and et cetera. So it's something you might want to consider adding to your library. I think there were like $4 or $5. Bought this and four or five other cliff notes or short versions of things that are happening New and Old Testament, and took them to the Philippines, and they just loved it because most of them speak English, and this really gave them a reference. But anyway, primitive history is thought to start around 4000 BC. And then we have the patriarchal history. That's the remainder of Genesis. And it has four specific events: the creation, the fall, talking about the Garden of Eden, which was east and a little bit north of the nation of Israel, and then the flood, the dispersion of mankind after the Tower of Babel, and the Lord confused the languages, and some of the sons and descendants of Noah were sent various ways to Africa and to the Far East and then into Europe. And then we have the dispersion, and it covers four primary people in the Genesis: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And we're not going to go through all these. If I can get my cursor to work. Just an outline in case something you might want to use in your family Bible studies, homeschool, or whatever it is, but it has the specific event in this outline and the chapters it's found in. And that way it just kind of makes it easy to do a review, and or if you have a specific event such as the genealogist, geez, and it's all summarized in this Bible timeline, it makes it really easy. And then you get into the nations that are starting to spring up from the dispersion of mankind, and talks about the generations of Shem, and then Ham, and then Japheth. It's just kind of a quick outline to see where God's people fit into God's plan. And of course, they end up in Egypt. And that's where Exodus picks up. It gives you some highlights, and you can read the specifics about Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and others. But essentially, at the close of, if I can get my cursor and everything to work well, of Genesis, the children of Israel are in Egypt, and they're going to be there for over a little over 400 years. Now, Exodus is coming up, if I think it's on the next page of that printout, and this is following up the story of what happens in Egypt. As I said, it was a little over 400 years. Some have said around 430, 432, but those exact dates are still a little take some digging out to try to get to. But this is Genesis. Exodus starts the beginning of the fulfillment of the promises given to Abraham that are found back in Genesis, specifically Genesis 12, and around the first seven verses. And so it is the purpose of Exodus is to trace the rapid growth of Jacob's descendants that Joseph ends up being sold and taken down to Egypt first and earns great honor among the Pharaoh there and is placed second in charge. And then Jacob, because of the drought, had to leave roughly what we call the land of promise, Israel, and go down there to survive. But God kind of all wrote those marching orders up, if you will, because he saw a need for his people to, number one, be fruitful and multiply to fulfill those promises that were made to Abraham, but also they become the beginnings of a nation. You know, approximate times, but at Mount Sinai and in the plains of Moab, God also gave the Israelites a body of legislation. You know, we don't appreciate, we're all born into a country that has an economy, it's got government, it's got police, it's got a commerce, banks, and all kinds of corporations. But here, these people of God have been in slavery, and of course they're crying out to God, send a deliverer, send a deliverer. And along with that comes a lot of responsibility. They were more or less under the authority of the Egyptians while they were there, but they were also given a way to get their food, but they were in slavery. They were expected to work hard. But during this 400 years, as we find the very first of Exodus, that they were fruitful and they multiplied. The generations generally seen roughly at 20 years. In other words, the parents born, they have their childhood, they grow up, and then they get married and then they have a child. And that's seen more or less as a generation, 20 years. In fact, there are other indications when the Israelites went to battle that there was a demarcation at 20 years old, and people were judged to be of age at 20 years old to go and fight with the army or whatever need to be done. We have that set at 18 years old, that many of our teenagers can, some of them drive before then, but they can transact business, sign contracts, join the military, etc. But 20 is the age back then. So there is a population experience. I think I remember Waylon shooting out a number. It's not known. It's told about the, I understand it, is the ones that were 20 years and older. It was around 500,000 or 600,000, but then you consider wives and children, et cetera, it might have been around 1.2 million. And considering the family that went down there, less than 100 of Jacob's family, that's a lot of multiplication there. And a nation is built. It was part of God's plan. And of course, there were a lot of oppressions that we find there in the first chapter of Exodus, and they cry out from their toils and labor and slavery in the second chapter. And this is around 1500. They went into captivity somewhere around 1850. This is B.C., before Christ. And now it says they're getting kind of tired of this, and it has carried a burden. They cry out to God there in your outline of number one, C, that we need a deliverer. So Moses arrives on the scene, and we will not go into a lot of detail, that he sent down there around 1500 and makes his appeals, he and Aaron, to Pharaoh, let my people go. And of course, it takes roughly 10 sets of miracle/events that Pharaoh says, okay, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. He kind of, I feel, wanted the Israelites to understand this is a transition, but it's not going to be an easy transition. You are residing around the land of Goshen, which is kind of the fertile area of Egypt, on the lower part of the Nile River. It often flooded and renewed the nutrients in the soil, and so they were in a good part of Egypt, and that's where God placed Jacob and his family when they came down from the area north of there. So eventually God says, okay, it's time. There in the 12th chapter, it's time to prepare to depart. We know that I know it was the hand of God that all the Egyptians loaded them up with their silver and gold and different products and things that would help them to be on their own. They exit Egypt, and it's by the miracle of God. He delivers them from Pharaoh and his army and the crossing of the Red Sea and the parting of that. And so then they start heading into the area around Sinai. But immediately there in chapter 15 of Exodus, they say, we had plenty of meat in our pots in Egypt and food to eat, and now we're out in this wilderness and we need food. So a manna was sent. They need water. There was water sent. Oh, we really would like some meat. And so the doves were sent until they couldn't hardly eat anymore. But, you know, as we read these things, we look at our own selves. We look at our own culture, our own nation, even the world, that we get what we want, and then we kind of go into the grumbling mode. And, well, yeah, I enjoy that I've got a shelter, a bed, room to sleep in, and I enjoy that I have some food. But I really need a car, and I really need this, and I really need that. It's the nature of mankind, and God's got to deal with this through Moses and Aaron. And it does happen. This is kind of the main theme of Exodus, and we've been through that. But this is just a summation of it. As we go down there, it's the last part of Exodus from the 19th chapter on that God starts to say, we need to put some structure to these people. They're out of control. They're always testing Moses. They're grumbling. They want to take these matters to Moses and, try to get an opinion on it. I believe also, I don't think it's on here, that Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, says, you've got to appoint some people to help you here. There, people are taking all your time to settle their disputes. So God starts to put structure to his people, the descendants of Abraham. They've multitude to well over a million. Multiplied well over a million. And so God starts that process in the last half of Exodus. And the tabernacle is described in chapter 25. They're given a lot of specifics, and you wonder where they got all those fine linens or the materials to make them, and the gold and the silver to make the rings and the post bases and et cetera. And the bottom line is God had this all planned out, and a lot of that came with him from Egypt, and I'm sure they secured some of the timbers from the lumber that God described for them to have. And so there towards the last of Exodus, they do build the tabernacle of God. They mean place of God. It had a tent, also the tent of meeting. And I don't know, did y'all cover the last two verses last Saturday? I'll just give you a quick summation. It's just more instructions about the clothes of the priest and the significance of the ephod and different things. It's good reading. If you'd like some home reading this week, we won't spend time on that, but that gets us in to the book that we're about to cover. And the reason Alvy and I talked, and do we want to pick the pace up a little? Nita and I kind of got ahead of the game. We do the daily audio readings, and we've been through Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Ruth and on into the Judges. And so I felt, just my personal judgment, and we, Albie and I, are open to input. But as we go into some of the nitty-gritty of the responsibilities of the priest, of the tribe that God has ascribed to be the interactor boys in person, the Levites. And that's what Leviticus is named after. And so it is translated from the Hebrew that it's, and he called. And there are a lot of instructions. There are a lot of specifics in here. We're not going to cover those tonight, but hopefully it'll give our speaking brothers some time between now and Sunday to kind of look over this outline that we're about to cover. It's on your next page there. And it is a, it's just a suggested way that we might cover Leviticus instead of taking 27 weeks or half of that time, 2 or 3 months, kind of group the chapters. And it's going to take a little more prep from our brothers that will be speaking to read through those groupings, the chapters included, and maybe pick out a couple highlights. I still think it's important to read some of those scriptures and not just make a cliff note type summary, because there's some very specific things that are covered in there. And so we're going to kind of sum that up in the intro here. This is considered, this book of Leviticus, the from the Latin Vulgate, the matters of the Levites, the specifics. I have a priestly group of people. They couldn't own land, per se, when they get to the promised land. They also had different responsibilities, and that was their goal in life. It wasn't going out and conquering land and the armies and all this and that. Down there I have 4 points, or several points, that so the year before they camped at Mount Sinai, the presence of God's glory had never formally resided among the Israelites. His interaction with his created beings came through Moses, and later some of the subsequent generations. A central place of worship has been described. It's a mobile, we want to use the reference, a church building, if you will. They could take it out and they'd move it to a new location. God would show them a way with a pillar of fire or a cloud. And so that's continued to be dwelt upon and specifics given. And it is a structured and regulated set of sacrifices and feasts that are, that hadn't been given before this time, and now they're giving it. They're, God is letting us know, I want to be worshiped. I want to be honored. I want to be recognized. I want to build God Almighty, the creator of the universe, which this has been passed down from the story of the creation, the flood, and et cetera, all been passed down verbally over the years. Now, it wasn't until later that all this was recorded from the verbal passed down information by Moses. And so a structured way to honor God is put together, and lots of details in Leviticus, Numbers, and some in Deuteronomy. Also, a formal priesthood is being announced. It's being expounded. And we're going to read a lot about of that, a lot of those things in Leviticus. And there were certain workers that were appointed to certain things. that it wasn't by happen chance. It wasn't, well, whoever shows up, you can carry the, pack up the poles and carry them of the tent of meeting in the tabernacle to the next location. They were all very organized, and it gives all the chief tribes and families of the Levites, and they had their specific duties. As Exodus concludes, it features one or two, a lot of this has been accomplished. Therefore, requiring the elements of the latter two to be, that we just covered, to be inaugurated, which the book of Leviticus provides. In Exodus 19 and 6, it says, called Israel to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. God has appointed them. He has put this all together, I think, since the beginning of time, that to leave mankind on his own discipline, thought basis, making choices, we can see how that went, how to go in the Garden of Eden, how to go in the times before the flood, how to go after the flood, shortly after, and mankind decided they were going to build a tower to God. And the list goes on there in Genesis. I think we're given that to history to appreciate that God says, now's the time I will be worshiped. I will be honored in an orderly basis. Now, this is going to change, of course, with the coming of Jesus and even with the building of the temple. But this is where it starts. Last part of Exodus, and now we're very serious into the organization, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So God, the Leviticus that we're about to cover, is God's instruction for newly redeemed people, teaching them how to worship and how to obey them. While they were in Egypt, and even before then, it was tribal rule. It was rule by Abraham, by the people that God talked to. They would relay that to the people. Now we're going into a very specific laws, if you will. What I've got below here, and we're just going to quickly look at this, and our time will be up. I have grouped this, and that's just a liberty I took. And like I said, Ollie and I will be very glad to talk or introduce other ideas, or perhaps there's a particular chapter or a chapters that are very meaningful. So this or this outline can be interrupted. It's not carved in stone, but in the first five chapters, which was kind of a logical beginning and stopping place without reading every word, and we'll find that Leviticus gets and Numbers Deuteronomy gets a little repetitive. But God wanted to be sure that they fully understood what they need to be doing, how they need to structure their life, how they need to structure their culture, their governance, if you will. First five chapters, this is kind of laid out to the whole Israelite people. And then the next two chapters, chapter 6 and 7, is specific to the priesthood. Direct responsibilities spelled out, talking about the different offerings of grain and offerings for sin and trespass, peace, and it is... I hope helps us to appreciate the law of love, the law of Christ, the direction that God is taking his people. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, they go through many gyrations before you get to the time of Christ, the judges, and I almost got depressed reading that book. It says that the people of God did what they wanted to do. They knew what they should be doing, that God would like them to do, but they just kind of decided they'd do their own thing. Well, I hate to say it, but the more I look at the news, and I try to not look at much of the news or read it, we're in that state today. We have a lot of people doing their own thing in a very ungodly manner, in a very perverse manner. The next part there is the formal beginning of the priesthood in chapter 8. And so that chapter 8 through 12, if one of the brothers, and I'll let all of you make some final decisions and assign that on a certain night for whatever. And this will take a little more preparation. And I think we'd still like some of the young brothers to do some selected readings. However that person would like to do it that's in charge that night. So we have verses 8, 10 that give the ordination of the Levites, of Aaron and his sons, the official recognition, the first sacrifices, and what happens when you don't do what God has purposely drawn a picture. It's called his law, his will, as it happens with the execution of Nadab and Abihu. Next, we go in chapter 11 through 16. It's a little bigger bite, but it's the preparedness or uncleanness. It's into some of these chapters. I think it would be unreasonable or not the best judgment to read the chapter on sores. Is it show red or a white, and you wait a couple days or a week, 7 days, and if it does this and that, I think we're just not quite there. I think there is knowledge. I think parents do this instinctively, that the child comes to them saying, I got a bad sore here. What do I do? Well, we do need to look at health concerns of our family. And that's kind of what the priests were doing here. They were trying to contain if there was a disease or a mold or a bacteria happening, that they would isolate for certain reasons for certain periods of time. It's true of the discharges from the human body, and also talks about the purification of the tabernacle from uncleanness. Also, if you touched the garments or a dead body, you know, you were isolated for a period of time. And then that next area there is chapter 17 on down, and I suggest A through D, which is 17 through 20, and talks more of the sacrifices and the food and the unclean food, and then the proper sexual behavior. You know, God really found out that if you just leave people on their own will to do as they'd like, it really doesn't turn out very good, because there is a natural attraction between the male and the female. So he gives them some structure about how you're supposed to treat your neighbor, and then how you deal with the capital crimes. And basically, I think we remember the eye for the eye, an eye situation. And if you went and killed someone, then your life was required, unless it was totally accidental. And then you could flee to a certain number of these cities that were made for those who did something, that were allowed to flee to these cities of sanctuary. Levi 21 through 24, it's more in instructions there. And that H item there about the account of blasphemy, you know, that's kind of principles that are carried over in the New Testament. A lot of these principles, the principle, I didn't say the exact crime and punishment, but the principles are carried over in the New Testament, and it helps us to appreciate the grace and the liberty that God sent with his son, because his son is that ultimate sacrifice. And they didn't have all these animal and offerings that were required by the Levites to perform. I think we'll leave it at that. And if you have thoughts, if this is a good way to approach Leviticus, and we may do a similar situation with Deuteronomy and Numbers, please let Alvy and I know. Are there any thoughts from the brothers? Okay. These outlines are to take home, and if we do this grouping of Leviticus, then this will help the person for that assignee even kind of know what they need to cover, or if that is something that's going to work for them. Yes? I think if you got seven there, it's kind of the way I'm meant to try to break it down. And like I said, this isn't engraved in iron, so to speak. If we want to deviate a little bit or cover a little more, a little whatever. But if you've been in, I'm sure most people have been into Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. There's some repetitiveness to it, and there's some details that just get a little tedious, I guess would be the best way to put it. And a little that are a little, I think, a little more description than we need that is beneficial for us today. But I think it's still good to cover these Old Testaments. When I read through this and the other books of Moses, it helps me to appreciate the grace God has given us through Jesus Christ.